about to enter the Double Dragon Podcast with Shane Greenwood, owner of Double Dragon Gym in the Sutherland Shire, Trent Lawrence, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and active pro Muay Thai fighter, Hugh O'Donnell. Are you ready? Fight!
Fight! All right, and welcome back to End of the Double Dragon Podcast, episode 64. It's your boy Shane Groom, coming from Double Dragon Gym, and right next to me is Trenton Lawrence.
Hello.
And coming via ACT. Oh, no, he's actually still in New South Wales, from
Queanbeyan. No, I'm back in New South Wales.
Yeah, Queanbeyan. From there is the Fire, from the Shire, Hugh O'Donnell.
Yo.
Hey, man. So, like, so let's just go into, like, a little bit of our segment straight away from that one. So, like, just go over why Hugh's in Queanbeyan at the moment. But, like, let's go to our WTF, what the fight section, a little bit of news going on. So, Hugh O'Donnell and one of the young fellas, Kai Wheaton-Jones, the grasshopper to the Fire in the Shire, are going to be fighting on Chaos Muay Thai tomorrow night in ACT. Should be a good one, mate. Like, yeah, your boy just weighed in. How you all feeling?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah. Cruisy weights for me and Kai, so we're both pretty happy. I actually, I don't know if this was for whatever. It got on the scale, and then I go, "What'd you come in at?" He goes, "Oh, 62 point something." And I said, "That's he's fighting at 63.5." I said, "That's heavier than I thought you were going to." He goes, "Yeah, I had 20 nuggets on the way."
Where's he putting them, mate? Is his legs hollow or something?
Must be.
But, like, yeah, so, like, tomorrow night we have Kai versus Josh from Muay U, who's trained by, like, Muay U is led by Kieran Walsh. And then we have yourself versus Scott Allen from High Impact in Orange, led by Anthony Whalen, I'm pretty sure his last name is.
Yep.
Do you know much about Scott from previous, you've seen him before?
I don't know. Like, Scott's probably a guy that I know the least about out of any of my recent opponents. Like, I remember him from kind of the early amateur days. Mm-hmm. And then seen a couple of his fights from a while ago, but wasn't super aware of him recently. He was kind of surprised to find out about this match. But I know he's aggressive. He's got a good punch. But for the most part, I'll just see what happens.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Just play it by you, see how it goes.
Yeah.
But, like, this card's, like, interesting as well because, like, it's actually, like, you know, it's got a really good headline act. And so we've got, like, you know, the very informed, also from about the Orange area as well, Charlie Bubb. Like, you know, stringing together a couple of K-1 fights because this is going to be a K-1 fight for him. Against the dangerous Mark Timms, like, who's, like, very, like, internationally experienced from there.
Yeah, this is actually really, like, kind of... Like, this is it's a reasonably big weekend in Australian Muay Thai. Roots is on a standalone Roots show. Roots is generally like the precursor to a Rebellion main card, but it's a standalone Roots, which means there are a few kind of Rebellion quality matches on it. There's a big Roots card down in Melbourne. Nizi Fury is on in Adelaide as well. And, like, I think of all the Muay Thai that's on this, all the kick fighting that's on this weekend, that's a sleeper fight. Like, because that's a really solid international quality match between a guy who's currently signed to Glory and is in form in that promotion in Mark Timms, and a guy who's just really kind of lighting the country on fire and is on his way to sort of Australian Muay Thai superstar status, Charlie Bubb, and who is just dipped his toes into K1. He just had his first K1 fight about 4 weeks ago and beat the far more experienced and very highly tatted Vidar Hoduk from Turkey, who's like another guy who's really experienced on like the ultra stacked European scene. So this is just like really good match between like just a hungry youth in Charlie Bubb and just a cagey veteran in Mark Timms. And Mark's now based out of City Kickboxing in New Zealand, training alongside former opponent Israel Adesanya. So it will be interesting to see. The guy's been at just about every well-known gym. He trained under Don Miller at Superfight Gym for a while, trained with Joe Schilling at the Yard for a bit, was based full-time in China, fighting on their scene for a while. So it will be interesting to see Connor what new wrinkles have been added to his game by the crew at City Kickboxing, because they're a very smart school.
Yeah. It's like, it'd be interesting to see what he brings to the fight. And also, it's interesting to see as well, Charlie Bobby, like, because for his K1 rules fight he had like in Melbourne, he didn't look too out of place in there. He has a style that kind of is like, it's able to transfer to both Muay Thai and kickboxing with a little bit of adjustments as well.
But I think for him, like, Charlie generally, like, in so many of his fights, just leads the dance, that to him it's just a matter of just don't throw elbows, which is, like, you could probably say is the case for all K1 fights, but, like, you know, if you know, you know. It's like, Charlie Barber, he always leads with his hands. Generally, if things go Charlie's way, he's backing guys into corners, things like this. So he always had just that good pressure style that translates well to K1 rules. But also I've seen in his Thai fights in the last kind of 18 months, he's really added a few more finer boxing elements. He's ripping the body really well. He throws in combinations. So I guess that's kind of made his style more of a neutral style to both rule sets in recent fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it should be like a barn burner tomorrow night as well. So
yeah, wicked match.
Yeah. So, like, you know, if you want to make the road trip, I know there's a couple of people actually making the road trip down to ACT tomorrow to watch you guys fight. If anyone else wants to jump on board, you know, just let us know. We'll meet you down there. Should be good. Or carpool.
Come through.
Yeah.
All right. And then come to the after party, and I have 2 spare beds in my room.
Woo, that's right. Partake. All right. So let's go a little bit more into our news segment here. So a lot of happening in the MMA world. So we have UFC fight veteran Yoel Romero. They're making money, counting stacks now.
Making fucking ching.
Was it 27.45 million?
Oh yeah.
Do you reckon he'll get paid all of that, or is it just that?
I don't think so. I reckon like the company will just declare bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Like that, but like he'd be still seeing like a fair few mil.
Even if they appeal it, and
he'll get a big enough piece.
Oh yeah, that's it, man. Mm. Like, you know, he'd be just living off Cuban cigars the rest of his life. That one. No, that's, you know, that's a lot of money in Cuba. But then again, maybe Cuba will take most of his money if he goes back over there as well. So,
yeah, I'd be staying, sitting yourself down in the United States of America and spending that money.
Cayman Islands?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it makes you think as well, like, you know, man, I don't know, would you fight again? It's like,
well, for position? A dude in Romero, who, how many fights did he have left anyway?
Yeah, he's up there, like, what? He's in 40s.
He's in his 40s. I'd probably say, like, 5 is a stretch.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, call it, man.
Fuck
that.
That's it.
Spend that money.
I think, like, you know, he was just looking to, like, get, like, one fight at light heavyweight and then just have a crack at John Jones or whoever's holding the belt then. And then, yeah, there wouldn't be too many more matches after that. But.
Yeah, just spend that money.
But, like, let's do, like, why did he get the money, though? So, like, you know, he was... I think it's picked up by USADA for, like, you know, like for a drug testing issue, wasn't it?
A banned substance.
Yeah, he got popped for a banned substance.
Yeah. But now, like, basically the court has ruled that the supplement company actually did have contaminated supplements. So they're basically, they're meant to pay him 27 mil.
Yeah. It was 6-month suspension too. So it wasn't even that long, really.
Nah, it wasn't at all. But, like, you know, he's getting, like, you know, all the money for, like, you know, like the big one is like emotional damage, loss of pay,
yeah,
pay for my lawyers, like that. And then just like, yep, yeah, let's just chuck a, you know, just a couple more million.
Well, but then it was also that, what state was it? State of Florida's fraud rules is that, like, if it comes under fraud, just your take from it just gets multiplied by 3.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, he made like, yeah, 9 mil or something, and then just tripled.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. That's it. Puppy's getting paid. That's it. But, like, yeah, well, good on him. Like, because, like, unless you're, like a Conor McGregor type or something like that, you ain't seen that type of cash in the UFC ever.
No.
Not even close. Not even close.
All right. So, going from there, like, a couple more news films. Like, so Bellator signs Robert Van Roosmalen. If you know, like, you know, basically one of the best ever. Lace up the gloves in glory for he is a Dutch kickboxer, and it's like he's basically, if you look up the dictionary for like what is Dutch kickboxing, RVR is basically like where it's at from there.
Yeah, ear muff guard, all pressure, hands into low kick all the time.
Yeah,
really nice style to watch, but one of those styles that you look at for kickboxing and go, I don't know how that fares in MMA.
Yeah, they say like earmuff guards and things like that. You think it'd change it, but hey, you know, no.
So he's transitioning into MMA.
Yeah.
Well, he's had a couple of MMA fights already, and he's relocated full-time to Florida, I'm pretty sure, where he trains in a reasonable stable, but he's one of his closest training partners is Gilbert Burns.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good
point. And I think they kind of do the old-fashioned pairing. You're like, I'll help you a little on the feet, and you help me a little on the floor. And
yeah, that's not bad at all.
Get moving.
And like, and actually, he was a judo black belt before he even like went into kickboxing as well.
There you go.
That's one of those things, like, I really think, like, Bellator are going to latch onto that for sure in their, like, promo material for him. Like, I get that he has a black belt in judo, but, like, I don't know what kind of bearing that actually has on his crossover ability from kickboxing to MMA. Yeah. Like, I haven't looked into it extent. Like, they always said it on Glory broadcast, like, Ben Rusmullen is also a black belt in judo. It's like, okay, but how long has it been since he's done any judo?
Was it a
judo? Did he ever compete in judo?
Got his yellow belt. Yeah.
That's it. If I get this marker, I'm turning it black.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see. I like to see, like, yeah, how he goes in there. Anyway, like, in Bellator, like, Bellator will do that. They'll just feed him a fair few cans from there. But
however, I do think they're actually doing a featherweight tournament that I saw in the initial release that he was got signed for Bellator. The idea was to put him in it. Oh. So he's not going to get cans for that long. Mm. Although I do think it might be a 16-man tournament. So that's... initially means there's going to be like 14 cans in the tournament.
That's like, I was going to say, like, you know, how deep is the featherweight division in Bellator, you know?
Not that. But you're going to put both pitbulls in the tournament?
Damn. That's it. Put them on either end and they meet in the middle.
Yeah.
But
I'm down for a pitbull versus pitbull tournament final.
But you know, it never happened. That's the rule. If you put the pitbull you want on the end of each bracket, they'll never make it. That's a rule.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, we learned this the hard way many times.
Yes. All right. A little bit more news from there. So, like, strawweight champion Jessica Andrade gets robbed at gunpoint in a car in Brazil. Just, you know, just Brazil doing Brazil things.
Yeah.
Just another very Tuesday. Heavy.
But, like, yeah, like, basically just took money, phone, earphones, and that. And she was with her wife as well. And then, but, like, it's funny, though. It's like, you know, where's the respect? She should be a fucking national icon over there.
Yeah, she should have some hero status over there for sure.
Yeah, it's bullshit. That's it. Pick up your game, Brazil. You know?
Yeah. I never heard of Anderson getting robbed at gunpoint during his title reign.
That's right. Fuck. They had billboards of the bastard. Alright, so that should conclude our WTF section from there, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Enter the Double Dragon podcast.
Okay, welcome back again. So this is a bit of our breakdown section and also preview section if there's stuff coming up. Probably mainly kind of like, it's more of a recap actually from there. So last weekend, we got invited to commentate at Yokao 39 and 40 and Next Generation. From there, it was pretty short notice. Like the night before, I had a phone call from Lewis Regis from SRG, who's helping out Yokao run it as a promoter. And heard that Vinny Shulman missed his flight to Australia on that one. But it's like, you know, his loss, our gain. And it's pretty cool, like, to get, like, international exposure as well. Because, like, it was live streaming on YouTube, I think it was.
Yeah, YouTube and Facebook. And it was on, like a separate, like, just live stream software. So, like, you could share it through any platform. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the distribution on this one was, like, pretty sweet.
Yeah. Like, you know, it was really good. Like, we were planning to go see the show anyway. But, like, you know, couldn't ask for, like, better tickets right on the ring.
Serendipity.
Oh. Got sprayed with so much blood and sweat. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Like, I literally, there was one point there was blood on my face. And I go, ah, nice. And I just had to wipe it off. I can't remember which fight that was, though, but there was a few cut fights in that gun around.
I've been tested.
That was reasonable amount of blood. I think that might have been Lloyd Dean's blood.
But, so, like, it was really good for Lewis and Guado from SIG to invite us and take a chance on us to do the commentating. So also shout out to Andrew Parnham from Sign the Sydney to basically give us our first start. So at least they kind of knew that we knew what we were talking about and we spoke well. and like we said before, if you listen, if you watch your cow again, like, you know, forgive, like, if it feels as like if I'm shouting most of the time and so is she, but we literally were shouting at each other most of the time as well, just because the situation was like, first show we did, Simon Sydney, we had headphones so we can hear each other. Yokel, we weren't giving them, we were just giving mics, so like, it was a little bit hard to hear each other, especially when we had a third person in the booth, like Sai Naji or Alexi Serapisos from there. Like, I could talk, we put him in the middle of me and Hugh so we can talk to him, but I really didn't know if Hugh was saying. It was too far, just being one seat away, I couldn't hear anything he was saying.
Yeah, by the time we had three in the booth, like, the position of the guest was always, like, the best way it could be with the guest in between us. But, like, as soon as, like, the person in the middle starts to engage the other person, like, you're, like, a world away. Like, it becomes, like, two commentary teams of two and one.
Yeah. But, like, you know, going forward, they're going to have to ask next show, any other shows they want to sign, and we're available. We'll go. Any show to commentate. As long as it's a Muay Thai show, if it's kickboxing, fuck off. I don't want to commentate it. but yeah, if we just have headphones, it just makes a world of difference.
You know? Yeah, particularly on a show like that, that was like really, when we were up to Sydney, when we had the headphones, we probably could have done it without the headphones there. Yeah. Like, because we just kind of like were sat away from the ring with a little bit of a bird's eye view and outside of like the loudest, most involved parts of the crowd. But here we were like centimeters behind us, were like really loud and involved crowd, which is good to see, like how just like into it the crowd were at this show. And we're also like just right at the ring, so the Tyson Rama is playing like right next to us, and then so there's just so many things to contend with. But like like you're better off just shouting at each other in commentary than just not being able to hear each other. It's probably would have been less enjoyable if we just kind of like spoken into the microphones but just always commentated completely irrespective of what the other was saying, because you would have just got us saying the same things at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. But anyway, it was a good show, and we made do it, and it, like, from what I've heard back, did okay. Still came off pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All props to the sound guys that were working it.
Yeah, the sound guys had a job.
We did get past a couple of notes, though, like, you know, telling us what to do, though. We didn't know if it was working, because, like, you know, we're just giving the mics to go, I guess we're on. And then
no one told us if the show had started or not.
Yeah, we just go, oh, we might as well just start talking, see. And then after a fight or so, like, then the notes started coming in from the sound desk, and I go, ah, okay, yeah, I guess we're on, so cool.
Well, one thing that was also kind of a problem was, like, when the last time we did it, we could watch a screen of what the people at home are seeing, whereas this time we didn't have that, so, like, what I found from going back is that, like, they would play promotional packages for people at home to watch, and we would just be yapping over the top of them because, of, like, I have no idea what the people at home are seeing or listening to or something like that. Yeah, like, I have no way of telling.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm just sitting there yapping. And no one ever gave me a bump to be like, hey, bro, probably be quiet. And, like, that's where the sound guys came in, because for the most part they would kind of turn us down and just let me ramble on and then play the promotional package. But it would have been nice to have that little bit. Also, like, we didn't get to communicate with the ring MC at all. Like, he didn't really tell us when he was about to talk, things like that. So, yeah, we kind of just had to do a lot of guesswork.
That's all right. Just notes for going forward, that's all.
Yeah, good experience either way.
Right, let's talk about a couple of the fights. We're going to talk about all of them from there, but, like, we'll talk about just a couple of them. Which fight did you want to talk about first?
I can't really remember what order these fights happened in, but I think definitely one of the standout fights was the somewhat always returning Reece Saliba taking on Sydney-based Thai Palanchok out of PTJ Muay Thai, the gunman. I thought this was like just an awesome fight in terms of just like the pendulum swings in the momentum of this fight. I thought, like, the storyline of it was just Palanchok just doing what he does, he likes to play off the ropes and sort of do a counter kick and knee game. And he's like, had his left knee working really nicely, kind of just running Reese over the top of it. Reese was starting to work his body shot. His left liver shot was looking really nice. Like, and sitting ringside, it was awesome too, just to be able to hear that land because Chalk was sort of dancing it off, but it was landing with effect for sure. And that's kind of like, that's like an investment strategy in your first two rounds of a fight, I believe. Coming into rounds 4 and 5, we're sort of trying to play the long game and slow Chalk down, which I guess kind of happened because I think Chalk really just he really dictated the points game through 3 rounds and was really, I think maybe kind of just thought he'd just coast through 4 and 5 and take his points and go home. But Reese Lieber just saw his spot, kept ripping that body, and then just burst an elbow. Like an upward right elbow through the middle of Chalk's guard and cut him a beauty kind of on the bridge of his nose. And once he saw blood, it was absolutely on, poured on the pressure, just did not let Chalk breathe. And you could see, like, it was just a shift in Chalk's entire demeanor to this fight. Like, that, like, oh, shit, I really can't play with this guy anymore. I've really got to get my wits about me. He's going to run over me and stop this fight. So Chalk kind of just spent the fourth round in survival mode. The doctor had to look at his cut at one point, which is kind of crazy to see the tie being the one that got cut, especially because, like, Chalk effectively opened the fight by cutting Reese. And then the fifth round was just this real, like, you could see Andrew Parnham in the corner kind of had to communicate to Chalk, you now have to go back out there and really take this fight back, or Reese has probably done enough damage where if he takes the next round again, he could be up on points here. And they really battled, had some interesting clinch exchanges. Reese ripping back for those elbows again in the fifth round. And then at the end of it, ended up being a draw.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah, an interesting score. I think, like, this is definitely an example of a fight that Reese pushed that draw with one round, I believe. Like that... but did more damage in that. Probably did more damage in that round than a couple of the other rounds of the fight combined. Not all the rest of the rounds, but a couple of them were combined. So yeah, kind of just secured a draw with just a big one round, and then yeah, but just that battle through like the fourth round to watch Reese kind of like sway the fight back was awesome. But also just to watch the way that Chalk got his feet under and began and battled back again in the fifth. So that. Yeah, so the fourth, fifth round, I'd recommend jumping on the stream and finding that one. It's just an awesome just battle of a fight.
Yeah, and it's like, it's funny when we're doing the broadcast from there that, like, you know, I was talking about guys, you know, Chalk, you know, never, it's like he's always, like, stoic, never see him do anything. And then at the end of the first 3 rounds, he's just sticking out his tongue. He's, even during the fight, he's making faces from there. I go,
yeah, dancing.
He's like, okay, damn, I've never seen him this animated before. That was good to see, but like, yeah, but when it came to fourth round and fifth round, he wasn't dancing anymore. He looked fatigued, but he was still trying to pick his shots.
It's a very smart fighter, is Palahniuk.
It's also like of note for Palahniuk from there, he always makes it hard to score. Like, you know, like everyone's like, there's split sides on this one again. Oh, it's like, oh, I thought Reese won, I thought Palahniuk won. Or like, people just go, yeah, draw's fair. But like, you know, go back to his fight like with Jay Tonkin and Cruz Briggs, Nathan Robson. It's like all these fights, like, there's always like, you know, go, oh, you know, everyone's just split down the middle every time he fights.
Right. I think a lot of the thing in Chalk is like, it's changed since he's been here, but his style is not particularly internationally friendly. It's a lot of backward movement and a lot of kind of like finer point scoring things. And then when he fights guys with higher pressure styles, like Nathan Robson, like Jay Tonkin, like Cruz Briggs also, it cannot always be completely obvious to the naked eye who won.
And like, you know, that goes again for like some of those fights where like people going, oh yeah, I don't think he won. It's like, but if you know Muay Thai, go, yeah, he did. It's like you have to watch a little bit closer. Also, probably go back to our episode where we talked to Elias about Muay Thai scoring.
Yes, that's an important resource. Well, I know you're in Chalk's fights as well. Like, I've had conversations with people at shows and stuff afterwards where they go, yeah, I thought he lost. I go, really? What? I asked him about round splits and stuff. They go, yeah, look, mate, I don't really know about scoring. I just thought he lost. And I go, that's what?
So if he isn't going forward, he's losing you, right? Right?
It's like in one breath you can tell me you just have no idea how to score it, but you also have a conclusive, unarguable winner. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Because in this country, I have opinions, all right? All right, so yeah, that was a really good fight. Like, it was probably my favorite fight of the night, and there was a fair few which I really liked as well. But I really, this fight in particular, like I said, the narrative of the back and forth it was awesome. It was really great.
Yeah, just the best storyline.
Cool. What's the next fight you want to talk about?
Let's talk about, there was another draw. When's the last time you got two draws in one night in a Muay Thai show?
Yeah, bizarre. Very bizarre, actually.
But one of my personal favourite fighters, really ever since I started on the New South Wales scene, Lee Harness Fook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, someone, like, really, I remember, like, the first time I ever got to spar Lee, I was fanboying a little bit. I think I just started as an amateur.
Mm.
Because the man is just, like, an excitement machine. Like, a lot of people would have seen his kind of viral knockout of Albert Xavier, where he threw sort of spinning back forearm off of a missed kick, like, just that kind of just ridiculous violence. His elbow TKO, just destruction of Mark Crawley to win the WMC title, is one of my personal favourites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A couple of years ago now. Took on Sarkis Dewey, who's an SRG original, who's now based out of the famed Khem Muay Thai gym, training under Khem Sitsong Pinong up there in Thailand, and was being brought in. Lewis was nice, even though he's over in Thailand now, he still got flown in to fight on the big show.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just an awesome fight of, I guess what you'd call this fight of, like, one guy who was tech savvy, probably the more technically savvy of the two, of one guy versus one guy who was absolutely refusing to lose. Mm-hmm. And that was Lee Fook. And it was just like, Sarkis knew the plan. Like, Lee's a southpaw and Sarkis is orthodox, but I'd say Sarkis probably played the game you in an opposite stance fight that you more typically see the southpaw play.
Mm.
He was landing his kick across the arms and up high often and just racking up points at that. But it was just a matter of kind of like when Lee could get in close and cover a little bit of distance and fight his time, he was just relentless with these inside elbows, just throwing everything through it. And he just cut Sarkis an absolute beauty over his lip. And Lee's just one of those guys, quite similar to Reese when he cut Chog. Just once he sees a little bit of blood, he will just go after it. He doesn't get discouraged if he's sort of getting outpointed a little bit. He'll go after a finish and just to do damage. And then it sort of looked like Sarkis really started to find his rhythm in the fourth round and land some consistent point-scoring blows, like good, solid, damaging kicks over the arms and stuff like that. And then the fifth round, Lee battled back again. He said, kind of just, you could see in Lee's fighting demeanor, was like, I'm not going home a loser tonight. I'm getting after it. And then I think just, yeah, the judges again just rewarded the high damage moments from Lee enough to even the score up and call that one a draw. So, yeah, just great match, I thought.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just good to see, like, Lee back, looking like the old Lee, just, like, putting
visits. Good to see Lee in form, yeah.
And, like, yeah, it was a story, like, you know, Lee, yeah, just getting close. Like, he was ripping, like, you know, ripping the elbows, or, like, he was just really, like, some big, big punishing hand combination as well. For that.
His hands look good, yeah.
Which is good, like, working to your elbow game. Sarkis, yeah, like, you know, taking that head kick to Lee a fair bit, just high on the gloves. You know, just getting to that point where it's just hard to really cleanly defend him and keep your balance at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's like, he even tried to go forward a lot as well, off Lee. So,
Absolutely. It was just a real good war of attrition, this one. And I know Sarkis, it will be back entirely now, but I'd like to see someone with deep pockets let those two do it again. Because it was just one of those ones where, like, okay, draw. I know there was a bit of I think a lot of the community were probably leaning towards Sarkis taking the win, which I can very much understand. But let's go round 6 through 10.
Yeah. So do it again.
Please.
So it'll be a guaranteed another banger fight. So, let's talk one more fight, man. So I think we know the fight we have to talk about here for that one, because it's like they had the most spectacular knockdowns in it. That one. So
yeah, and we'll just give a little bit of shine to the. Probably this was probably, like, as far as, like, experience and age in a little bit, like, the youngest profile on the card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah just be. Like kind of like two lesser knowns to the wider, to the Yokeyama Muay Thai community.
That's it. And it was like, so from New South Wales, we had representing Warpath Martial Arts in Picton from there. We had Jordy Bulgari having his second pro fight from there. Like, he's had a fair bit of amateur experience around Australia.
Yeah, and I think also a young guy. I think he's only 18.
Yeah. 18, yeah. So, and it's like, I think he's fought in Thailand as well, maybe.
Yeah, he's fought in Thailand.
Yeah. But like, but he was coming against like someone that's fought some pretty good guys, like on the Melbourne scene, and Smoking Joe Cloverdale. That one.
Yeah, Smoking Joe's made a bit of a name for himself down there in Melbourne. I would probably say, like, as far as sheer number of fights, I think Geordie's had a lot more. Mm. But pro fights, Joseph's had more. But like, so I was saying this on the broadcast, they don't really have amateur fights in Victoria the way that we do in New South Wales, in a way that you can really sustain an amateur career. Guys kind of just go straight to what goes on the record as pro, but fighting, you know, like 3x2s and things like that in a pro format. So Carvedel's kind of like been fighting higher opposition, but doesn't have the overall experience as Jordy Bulgari. And I thought Jordy Bulgari did look the more experienced of the two in there.
Mm. Yeah, it was good, like, back and forth exchanges for a while there. Like, you know, Joe was just kind of trying to walk him down a bit, use his hands and, like, trying to work his knee game. Jordy Bulgari was, like, ripping, like, big right hands and also to the body as well with his left rip.
Yeah, his left rip to the body looked good.
Mm. And then, like, all of a sudden, like, from there, like, Joe Coverdale just finds himself against the ropes and Jordy just uncorks his spinning elbow and just absolutely annihilates Joe Coverdale, I think, right at the end of the second round, I think it was, the second round.
I think it was later than the second. I think it was, like, maybe the third.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know it was, like, it was towards the end of the round because they were counting him, but then the bell rang. Oh, no, the bell rang a little bit from there and, like, I just go, man, I don't think, like, if the dog's going to have a good look at it, I don't think he's going to make it out of the round, like, you know, for the next round. Because, like, he didn't know which corner to go to. He was, like, just stumbling around and goes, we're still fighting, aren't we? And the refs go, no, you go back to your corner from there.
Yeah, I think this was one of those ones that, because, like, he was knocked down and then the bell sounded. And then so, but you can't be saved by the bell as such. So he had to be counted. And then the round play would commence. I honestly would have liked to look, I find it hard to say because when I'm in there, I would never have this tape with myself. I'd say, just let me go. Mm. So I don't like to say it for other people, but I think that you could have waved this one off without a count. Like, he tripped a little and then fell flat on his face and stayed there for a little while. And then you could see in between rounds that he was glossy-eyed. And, like, you know, you have the full two-minute break and a full tie rules fight. And that's kind of what saved him, was the round break. But I don't think – look, I credit him for coming back the way that he did because he was fighting well at the start of the next round.
Like, if you came in, like, if you didn't see the knockdown from that, you'd just go, oh, no, this seems to be a pretty competitive fight afterwards. You wouldn't tell, like, you got fucked up, really.
But then, towards the end of the fight, he got knocked down with a spinning elbow again.
Or, like, were they, like, trading spinning elbows a little bit, and then and then they wait a bit, and then...
It was kind of just, like, they were battling, and Joe's doing a lot of the work with the hands, and Jordy was kind of just, like, really, a lot of it was, like, Jordy was pretty content to hang back and just, like, set single shots and sort of just hold points. And then, just as Joe really had his feet under him again and was starting to get a roll on, he decided to get tricky and throw a Hail Mary spin elbow. And then Jordy evaded it because it was not particularly well set up. It was kind of like it was off the mark for sure. Jordy's kind of like slipped out of range. Then fired a spinning elbow straight back while Joe was off balance and floored him again with it to close the fight out. Ridiculous.
It was. It's just like one of those ones where you just go, oh, my God, I just can't believe what I'm seeing. Two spinning
ridiculous.
Elbows.
Ridiculous. So good, though.
Yeah. Two spinning elbows in the one fight. It was awesome. It was very good. Yeah, it was a good performance by Joey Bulgari. And, like, Jesse Coverdale, he'll come back from it again. It's like, it's just
learning. He'll be back.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's had a really tough run of top opposition, and it's can be a little bit brutal at times, but, like, that's the kind of things that make you better as a fighter, to go through these stretches.
Yeah. Cool. So, like, if you watch the live stream, like, definitely watch those fights. A couple of other fights to watch for, Franz Dirty Sanchez versus Thomas the Tank Engine Wilkins. Was it a good fight?
Yep.
Yep. So watch, sweet fight. Watch that one. Watch a clinic, like a good Muay Thai clinic of different styles fighting each other. It's like Simpayak from PDJ versus Lloyd Dean from Riddlers. From there.
Yeah, just smooth techers versus just hard.
Yeah. I didn't really watch the last fight from there, but these had some pretty huge tie names on it from that one. Like, you know,
yeah,
where we had like Singdom and had Super Bank as well. And they just,
yeah, watch the main events. I think it's like, it's easier to just tell you to go watch those. Like, it's easier on a podcast to kind of give shine to the ones that you may have overlooked. So, of course, go and watch Singdom versus Lexi and Superbank versus Zach Anderson to watch, like, you know, two legendary ties.
Yeah.
Really kind of, like, put on clinics, really, and do what they do. Yeah.
Yeah, this is classic displays by them. It's good.
Beautiful. And then Alexi had a really good go against Singdom. Like, he held his own for sure. I thought that was... Actually, really, both boys put in respectable performances against such A-grade ties.
Mm, definitely. Cool. All right, and that closes out our recap of Yokao. And like I said before, thanks again to Lewis and Aguado for having us on. Hopefully, we can do it again in the future. Hopefully, Vinny Sherman misses his flight again from there.
Or maybe Vinny Sherman can commentate next time I'll fight.
Yeah, that's it. Fair enough. Or maybe, like, you know, Yokao might want to replace him and, you know, put your boys in.
Yeah, I'm cool with that too.
Yeah, cool. All right, sweet. So let's go from there. Then we'll go over to Trent from that one. So there's a bit of jiu-jitsu going on this weekend.
Yeah, the IBJJF World Championships, or the Mundials. They're on. It's the biggest BJJ event on the calendar outside of ADCC. And I saw an article recently saying why it's tougher than the ADCC, but I don't know. It's in the gi and there's a lot more competitors and they don't get any like free passes and things like that to get through to your division. So I guess they're all good reasons, but you know, gi, no gi, pretty different, really, in my opinion. But yeah, it'll be interesting because I think it's the Roosterweight division is unbelievably stacked. Usually, it's like really a really light division, but I've got like competitors from like four generations who've won gold medals from 2000 right through 2018. And the other thing to have a look at that division for is Cowterra, Bruno Malfacine, and Mikey Musumeci. But he's one of the most successful American competitors ever. Cowterra, I think he won the gold in 2016 and 17, around then. And Bruno Malfacine, he's just won everything every year up until last year. The three of them are all sort of starting in the same opening prelim brackets. So you're basically going to see like championship level matches really early on in the brackets. So it's unusual because usually you'd see those kind of matchups like deeper into the brackets.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that you've got all these multiple world champions opening up that division, which kind of gets overlooked because it's a lighter one. Yeah. And then I can't see too many more matchups because they like to lock off these articles on Floyd Grappling. It's kind of fucking annoying. Anyway, so yeah, every name you can think of, like Marcus Buchecha Almeida, he's fighting, I think, in ultra heavy. I'm not too sure. I did find some names from Australia. I'm going to read them out because I found them in the comments. Levi Xanadu Jones Leary, Ariel Tabak, Hope Douglas, Lucas Kennard, Nicholas Maglicic, Malicic. Yeah, Nicholas Malicic, I'm going to say that because it sounds better. Michael Doe and Tom Strimbicki.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Sorry for butchering your name.
Bicci.
Yeah, they're all high-level competitors representing Australia. So good luck to them. I think someone posted something online on Facebook, a fairly comprehensive list of Australian competitors at all the different belt levels from brackets. So if you can find that, maybe on the Australian BJJ community page, it might be up there. It's a bit frustrating to try and watch it because it's all locked down behind paywalls now. But, you know, if someone manages to get something online, let us know. We're on Facebook now, aren't we, for the podcast page?
Yeah.
So, yeah, hit us up on there. We're always open to some comments and some commentary about what's going on. What else is going on? Tim Spriggs and Patrick Guadio are fighting in the first round. Tim Spriggs, anyone who knows, he's a popular fighter. Jeff Woodruff, that's a possibility matchup with him. I'm just trying to find some other ones. Yeah, Marcus Almeida, he's ultra heavy. There you go. He's ultra heavyweight. Just trying to see who else is up there. Felipe Pino, Leandro Lowe, Nicholas Marigali. Marigali's super heavyweight. And Felipe Pino went down to medium heavy. But they're big names to look for in those divisions. Basically, this is anyone and everyone you can think of. I wish I could tell you more, but I don't have time to go through all the individual brackets at every color and weight and division. And, if you want to pay for grappling, you can go and read all their articles.
Yeah. How you meant to expose a niche sport by, like, putting it behind paywalls?
I know. I'm wondering that myself. Yeah.
Would anyone be backing it up from Worlds to go into ADCC?
You see a lot of cross competitors. Like, most of the guys that win ADCC have won the Mundials or won the big international events, like, you know, the Europeans and all the Pans and things like that. So, yeah, there's definitely, I mean, people have to argue, which is better, gi or no gi, but you know, most of the guys that win no gi have won big titles in the gi. That's not to say that it's always going to be that way, but I think part of it is just they just cross-train. They just train both, you know. I know Jean-Jé Ribeiro got an invite to this year's ADCC, but he said to pull out for medical reasons, you know, getting injuries fixed and things like that. But, you know, he's just as successful in the gi, and other past competitors have been as well. So, yeah, check it out. See what you can find online. It goes for 3 days. It's pretty much from Friday right through to Sunday. So we're behind. It's Long Beach, California, so we're roughly a day behind. So it should kick off sometime early tomorrow. But, if I find anything, I'll post it up, and hopefully people can have a look at it. If I find anything on YouTube, I'll post that up as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. All right, so that'll conclude our breakdown, recap session from there, and then we'll come back with a bit of combat sports fitness tips. Ooh.
This is the Enter the Double Dragon podcast.
Portion from there. So this is our combat sports fitness segment, strength and conditioning. Give you some tips from there. Had a good response to some of the guys in the gym last week about the cardio stuff from that. Was good. This week, speaking of talking about like actual weight training for combat sports. So, like, a lot of the stuff with like weight training probably here for like really old school guys or like old martial art heads from there. Talking about like you shouldn't weight train because it'll make you slower. From that one, and
yeah, that'll make you bulky, bro.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Your muscle twitch reflex will slow right down.
That's it, you know, because we all know like fucking Mark Coleman and you know Kevin Randall, they're slow dudes, weren't they?
They're slow.
They could have took some of my cardio tips though from last week, but but like going into like weight training, like it depends like you know how you train. Like if you train like a bodybuilder for martial arts, yeah, you're gonna be fucking slow. And, like, probably, you know, you'll have some hypertrophy, which can benefit you, especially if you're going, like, the higher weight classes from there. But, like, really, it's just not the ideal way to train. More so when you are training weights, it should be kind of, like, instead, like in a bodybuilding manner. And even not even so much, like, a powerlifting manner, even, like, should be, like, geared towards, like, athletic training and more so, like, structural balance. So, if, like, generally, like when I first take a client on or like do one of the fighters and things like that, I usually kind of take them through like a better like a cycle, like a month, okay. Just training, like you know, just make sure they're all structured balanced. So it's just a lot of unilateral exercises, dumbbell presses, things like that. Don't touch the barbell too much. Also, like you know, work on mobility. Teach them how to warm up properly, you know, go through the foam roller and just do some, like, simple hip, shoulder, and core activation exercises. Also teach them to cool down as well. So do a lot of, like, you know, diaphragmatic breathing or box breathing. If you know what box breathing is, it's 3 seconds in, 3 second pause, 3 seconds out, 3 second pause there in a long, breathing through your diaphragm manner, and that just really helps you get into a parasympathetic state of recovery. So you need that to recover a lot better. Okay, when you're doing sparring or pad work or even doing the weight training from there, your nervous system gets really excited from that one, and you just need a good way to calm it down. So that's always a good way of just doing it. It only takes like 3 to 5 minutes. Okay, but going from there, do a lot of structural balance stuff with the fighters, because most of the time, when you fight, or even if you are just a normal martial artist from there, not a lot of time is spent in both stances or drilling from both sides. I try and make a big thing of that, in the gym now, it's just good for just good brain development and coordination, agility from there. But most of the time, fighters are going to always grab a take when they actually do get the business from there, do it from the most pressable stance, got to up the winning percentages of it. But that just creates imbalances. So I spend a lot of time just trying to iron that out. So simple stuff would that be if you're doing combat sports, if it involves some sort of grappling, and that one, Muay Thai clinching, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, MMA from there. So lots of back work. So dumbbell rows, single arm pull downs, a lot of work the external rotators. So face pulls, Cuban presses and that. And then generally from there, fix everyone's lower body, because everyone works in a split stance when you fight. Okay, it's very rarely that you see fighters working with their feet together or in line. They're always in a split stance. So we try and do a lot of split squats, lunges, step ups, and then work the posterior chains, back extensions, GHR or Nordic hamstring curls. And then it's going to have a really strong posterior chain. And a lot of stuff from here is just simple. I do anywhere from 3 to 5 sets. 8 to 12 reps, generally just a starting off point. And this is when I'm talking about a starting off point, we don't have any fights lined up. We're in, let's say, quote unquote, off season as well. So you spend this time to balance out, so we can stress the system a little bit from there. But it's not going to dig too much into our sports specific training time. But once we kind of balance out from there, I kind of take an approach that was given to me by Phil DeRue, who's the head strength and conditioning coach of American Top Team. So I went to one of his seminars, and I kind of had an idea how to do this, but it's just good to see someone like him who's actually really pioneered a lot of the stuff of strength and conditioning for combat sports only, because that's a super young field. Because there's just no one around to do it. Really, it's just all the money's in big team sport. It's if you're doing strength conditioning for athletes, you want to, you want to get on the football teams, the soccer teams, in just big sports, even tennis. It's only now that fighters have basically producing, there's enough of them that you can actually make a good business out of it. But what he showed to us was taking a powerlifting method, namely the West Side method from there, and kind of molding a little bit for combat sports. And it's not too much, really. It's basically the West Side method includes a maximum effort day. So we'll do an upper body lift. That might be a push or a pull. So I alternate weeks between chin-ups and rows. And then the other week will be some sort of press. It might be a shoulder press. It might be a bench press from there. And we do that from 2 to 3 reps. And then looking for that little bit of grind, not to we don't want to fail ever, but we need the muscle tension and we need that grind to actually promote the response we're looking for. So max effort, we're trying to make the muscle that you already have there stronger. So really what we're telling the muscle to do is to contract harder. Right? And then once we're done 2 to 3 sets and 2 to 3 reps on that one upper body lift and one lower body lift, then we just go back to balancing them out, do their back work. Do some core work, do their leg work off of that. It's fairly simple. And then what we do second day of the week is we do a dynamic effort. So dynamic effort is all about the speed. And speed's so critical for especially for strikers. It's a very dynamic sport. We need that. Grapplers, sometimes especially when they shoot, but when we get into grappling exchanges, there's a lot more isometric holds happening from there. So I train them a little bit differently. But speed's a very important part for any striking sport. So usually working into like about 60, anywhere from 50 to about 65% of like, you know, your max one rep. Or sometimes I just go to like whatever lift we did the other day from there and just kind of like maybe take about 70% of that. Or keep a weight that looks fast as well. Like, you don't have to percentage it too much as long as the weight looks fast with like, you know, some decentish weight on there. So anywhere from 2 to 3 reps, 10 to 15 sets, 20 to 30 second break between each set as well is all you need to do for upper and lower lift. And this is why I go back to like, you know, doing structural balance again at the start, because you got to be fit enough to do that many sets as well. It's a different feel than like, you know, just hitting pads. Yeah. As Hugh knows well, like, you know, he doesn't like doing dynamic FX squats on that one. They're a bit rough sometimes on the legs. I'm doing a lot more plyometric now as well, like, you know, because same thing, like, you know, I can do that, but there's still eccentric loading, which is when you get sore from weight training, that's like, it's usually the eccentric portion of the lift, of the lowering of the weight, which gets you, which creates a lot more muscle damage. So, like, I'm doing a lot more plyometrics every now and again as well, especially when you get closer to the fight, because it'll eliminate the soreness, but it still produces speed response. So, like, when you're doing, like, a medicine ball throw or a jump, it's very hard to do that slowly. So, like, you know, like, when we throw the balls or jumping from there, we're still getting, like, a dynamic effort response.
Yeah.
And then after that, from there, same thing, structural balance again. Like, you know, you can't even out fighters enough, because, like, you just got to think about from here. Like, I always suggest, like, you can do your research and do it, but fuck, hire a coach. Like, you know, someone that knows what they're doing to kind of take you through. And, you know, that's the best way to do it. But, like, a lot of times for fighters from when I'm just doing this, like, yeah, I'm trying to make them more athletic, but there's a lot of times as well, I'm just training them enough to keep them balanced to stop like, your injuries happening from that. Because, like, you know, just the nature of sport, like, I can't stop, you know, soft tissue injuries, like, you know, from getting hit or maybe getting neck cranked, something like that. But I can help it, like, you know, basically iron out a lot of, like, just this dysfunction in the body from just, like...
Yeah, I think injury prevention is probably the most misunderstood area of strength conditioning for fighters.
Mm. Yeah, you try and get some people, like, just trying to go way too outside the realm, like, you know, like... functional training, which I don't even like the term of anymore because too many people fucked it over. Like, you know, all right, we need the balance on a Bosu ball while shoulder pressing, but I need you to basically make sure activate your transverse abdominum. All right,
what?
It's like, yeah, it's like some people just like everything just take it too far. There is like I'll like, you know, so like what I say from this, usually like just like if you're just going real basic, you only need 2 times of weight training. 45 minutes max in the weight room as well from there. Like when you first start off, 3 sets of 8 to 10, like that's a real simple thing. And just do a lot of unilateral stuff, like I said, like split squats, lunges, work your posterior chain, do your leg curls, do your back extensions, do a lot of back work, do a lot of rows in particular. It's because, like, you know, sometimes with overhead pressing and chin-ups, as we've seen, like fighters' shoulders aren't the best all the time.
Nope.
I couldn't lift my arms above my head when I met Shane. Mm-hmm. He's the advertorial part of the show.
That's it.
When I first met Shane Greenwood, I couldn't lift my arms above my head.
Cute to see him just going, just like, just raising the roof. Woo!
But now I can. I've got full rotation of my shoulders once again. Thanks, 10 years of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. So, but like, just do heaps of rowing actions, like every sort of dumbbell row you can think of. Cable rows are fine as well. Still do a little bit of pressing, but I kind of lean towards the dumbbells at the moment, like if you're just starting off. And that's about it. Like, you keep it simple. I try to do, like, each session full body as well. So do your upper and lower session every time. It's just been shown in studies that it's like, you know, instead of doing the bodybuilding split of, if you take the same volume, so if we did, like, legs day, we did 10 sets of legs. We did back day, 10 sets of back. It actually shows better hypertrophy and better, like, muscle retention if, let's say, I did 5 sets of legs one day and then I did five sets of legs the other day. And then same thing, do 5 sets of back one day, 5 sets of back the other day. It's the frequency that actually makes better muscle gains from there. So, But outside of that, like, you know, if you really want, like, athletic performance from there, hire a coach, do your research. There's plenty of great strength and conditioning coaches in New South Wales and Sydney from there. I know a lot of them. Follow the information by Phil DeRue. He's got his own podcast called Fight Strength. He does it with an Australian guy in Melbourne. That's really great as well. McGregor McNair from there. There's also another guy in Melbourne, Dan Howard, also a great strength and conditioning coach. If you're in the Shire, the guy I learned from, to begin with, Shannon Green, awesome strength and conditioning coach too from there. There's this, if you do your research, there's heaps of them. And the good thing about Australia as well, like a lot of strength and conditioning coaches, we'll go out and learn from other people and just diversify their skills a lot of times. Also. All right. But yeah, hopefully that helps. So, like, just a recap on that, 2 times a week, do a full body each session from there. Keep it simple. Like, you know, 3 sets of 8 to 10, 8 to 12. And, like, you know, if you ever have a question, you can always shoot it over to me as well. I don't mind answering it from there. I won't charge you for the first question. It's good. But other than that, I think they'll do it tonight. Nah. So like Trent said before, we do have a Facebook page now. And the reason why is that because Mr. Hugh O'Donnell also made a blog for us also. So
there's a, we're everywhere.
Yeah. Just like, you know, just the McDonald's factor. You just see us every place. But it's just good as well with the blog because, like, you know, we can talk about stuff on the podcast, but, like, you know, sometimes some people like to read. Sometimes it's visual as well. Like, you know, we can make GIFs and everything off with, like, you know, some of the breakdown work we do also. So, like, it just kind of, like, it just helps you – it helps people learn a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, the Facebook is at Enter the Double Dragon. Same as our Instagram. It's at Enter the Double Dragon. What's our blog? How do we get that?
DoubleDragonPodcast.home.blog.
Cool. All right. Got that one.
I'll get a shorter domain eventually, like a .com. I haven't decided what I want, if I want .com or .blog.
Nah, whatever. It's fine. People can
.gov.
No government stuff. I've got PTSD. Don't do it.
So, yeah, we're also on Twitter at @double_enter. Or just search, just Enter the Double Dragon Podcast on Twitter. And as always, like on our podcast, you can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, on all other podcast platforms. But that's it. We're done. Catch you later.
See ya.
Peace.